Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, before we kick off this episode of All the President's Minutes, I just want to give a shout out to two big things that are happening on the One Heat Minute Productions feed at the moment. One is the finale of Increment Vice is edging closer. Our huge scene-by-scene expansive examination of Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice, hosted by the incredible Travis Woods, narrated by the incredible Kat Corbett, is coming to an end. I want you guys to dive in and listen to that, or catch up to it, or subscribe to it, or find the Increment Vice Spotify playlist if you've got Spotify and just listen to all those episodes. It will eventually be in its own feed, but right now it's in One Heat Minute Productions feed. Follow it, subscribe, rate, review. It's been an incredible journey on that show. We have another great new show in its own feed called It Came From the Deep, which is an audiobook with an after show from Maria Lewis of Josie and the Podcasters. One of her books in the Supernatural Sisters series. Check that out if you dig the stuff that we do. But now let's go back to 76.
After a decade in politics, former National MP Jamie Lee Ross is out of Parliament. The Advance NZ co-leader joins me now. Jamie Lee, you just described yourself as a loser. You are out of National, out of Parliament, out of Botany. Your political career is in tatters. Do you have any regrets?
Look, we gave it a good go this time round. We put together a new party in just a few months' time. We only gathered 1% of the vote. It clearly wasn't enough, but I've enjoyed the opportunity to work with all the people that I have with Advance New Zealand.
Do you want to have another crack at answering that? Because I just asked you if you have any regrets. You've just been part of a political movement which has been peddling misinformation during the election campaign. Do you have any regrets?
No, I think we were asking some hard questions about the direction of COVID-19. If you're asking about regrets throughout the whole three-year term, of course, we could have all done things a lot differently and a lot better back in 2018, but we're here now, we made our bed and we just moved forward.
I want to focus on the strategy. Look, why on earth did you get into bed with Billy Te Kahika?
I could see that there was a lot of growth on social media. There was a lot of growth in the number of people coming along and looking at it.
So it was purely political ambition.
I could see that there was people out there who were asking questions around things that I believe in too, around freedom and sovereignty for New Zealand.
And a plandemic.
No, that is nothing. I've never said that, Tova.
You haven't, but he has.
I've never said that. COVID-19 is a real virus, and we're asking questions about whether the country was going in the right direction.
You know exactly what you were doing. You were whipping up fear and hysteria among vulnerable communities.
Not at all. If you go and look at the mortality rate of COVID-19 compared to other flu epidemics,
I'm going
to
stop. No, I'm not. I don't want to hear any of that rubbish.
You can't just give me that and not allow me to answer.
Well, if you're going to come on the show and say things which are just factually incorrect, I can do that, actually.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All the President's Minutes. I'm your host, Blake Howard. There are some returning guests that come on this show. And first, I'm honoured and flabbergasted and excited because there aren't many who ask for minutes. And the man that I'm speaking to today, I admire and love his stuff. And we had such a fun time talking. Now, 56 minutes ago in this movie that I said, you've got to come back around. When do you want to talk? And like literally, I thought that this minute would, maybe it's just because people aren't aware of the minutes. They just kind of like don't know where things are, but I'm assuming this guy does actually know where it is in this movie. He's like, oh, I would love, there's this, you know, the scene, the moment, the Gordon Willis, you know, pièce de resistance of All the President's Men is this unbelievable rack focus of paranoia for Robert Redford after a particular Deep Throat meeting. I would love to talk to you about that. And for a man who is now freelancing all over the place, who's the former editor of Time Out New York, a kindred spirit across the world, writing now for New York Times, Sight and Sound, and Empire. You would have seen all of his New York Film Festival stuff, some of the best coverage that's going around. He's my friend, Joshua Rothkopf. Mate, welcome back to All the President's Minutes.
Hey, Blake, how are you? It's so nice to see you.
It's nice to see you too. We've been talking about families and physical media, and we couldn't be happier to start this conversation with those two things. But for folks who haven't probably gone back yet to episode 52, if you're a maniac and this is your first episode of All the President's Minutes, welcome. You're coming in at probably one of the most dynamic moments of the film. And you've only now, if you're going to listen to the end, I've got about 30-ish episodes to go, or just under 30, and you're going to have a lot of catching up to do. But can you just remind people your love and affinity for this movie and this period and this, well, this, you know, enduring classic?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, I feel a little spoiled, I have to tell you. When we talked last time, I felt like for sure that we were talking about the greatest single rack focus, the greatest single zoom shot in the film and maybe in 70s movie history.
Yes.
And now the fact that we're actually talking about yet another one, I feel like it's almost like an abundance of riches. Thank you for letting me discuss the second moment. I'm a huge fan of All the President's Men. Not only as an appreciator of its status in the 70s as a pivot point between the deep, deep paranoia and cynicism of the early 70s and also the heroic streak of the late 70s, this film right on that pivot.
Competing in the Oscars that had Rocky and Taxi Driver. So if you're talking about the marriage of cynicism and hope and heroism, it's like literally all happening in this year.
Exactly. This is the year and this is the film. And also, I mean, anybody who enters into journalism, writing, just has to appreciate a film that is so distinctly about process, so distinctly about, I mean, the ultimate lesson for me that the All the President's Men tells, that I resonate with, that it tells me, is the pursuit of truth and the pursuit of clarity is important. If you are writing something, if you are making something, if you are making a podcast, if you are doing something, do it as well as you can. Do it better than anyone else did. Follow your dream as far as it'll go. And those are the things that I feel personally when I watch this film, because it makes me, it inspires me to seek out the truth even against all odds, but it also, it has wonderful scenes of editing, wonderful scenes of finding clarity. And the pursuit of that clarity, I think, is a victory in and of itself. Especially these days here in America, we're recording this less than 30 days before the election. Sorry to get all political on you.
No, this is the place for it.
I want everything to come out. I want a beautiful rise to happen in America. And I hope we're on target for that.
Yeah, it's so funny because the pursuit of clarity and the demand for clarity in this film, for folks who've just listened to the preceding minutes, is happening from sources and editorial staff, which is so refreshing because a Deep Throat, as this figure, is like, I hate inexactitudes. Like, it's like that word of, you must be exact, you must know what you're doing, and I'm going to give you all the pushes. Right now, he's at the precipice of what he's willing to say and how far he's willing to go with really painting the picture of exactly what he knows is happening. But I just love that there. And I think you're so right. This movie is, I've spoken to a lot of journalists, and you and I, you know, you way more than me are like a proper critical journalist. But I, as a writer, as someone who creates things, this movie has such a, every day is work. Like, I think that in sport, you know, what sometimes people who are creators and people who play sports don't realize is that they have one of the greatest kinships, because every day you have to put in your road work. Like, every day you have to be doing this thing to stay sharp. And, you know, you talk about comics who get up every night at the Comedy Store or at a club, or every night they're trying to like hone their craft, and writers who are every day are grinding some stories, some features, some things they don't necessarily want to write, other things, books, things they're hugely passionate about. You know, some guys are training for a fight or not, they're training to just stay in condition. It's like, that is my greatest kinship to this movie, I think. And as we pursue, it's like every day it's just getting up and pushing further, just like putting that personal best, that an inch, half an inch further ahead of you, and doing.
That's what Deep Throat says too, right? He says it's not just that he says he doesn't like inexactitude. He also doesn't like shallowness, right? Isn't that
yes,
the line?
Yes, yes.
Both of those things combined. Not only do you have to be laser-like in terms of precision, you have to be so exact, but you also have to be
substantive. Substantive.
You have to go as deep as you can. And like, no one is ever going to be able to say that you don't go deep. I mean, you've put it on the podcast.
I have taken that advice to heart. After however many times I've watched this movie, all right, he doesn't like inexactitudes, but certainly doesn't like shallowness. So I can't be accused of that. I don't think at any point. But no, that's the kinship. That's what I keep finding. It's like when you know, and in that in this same era, in this same moment, if you can compare and contrast the three endings of those movies we just mentioned earlier of your Taxi Drivers, which is you know this. It's like a fever dream ending, and you can compare Rocky, which is this soaring, you know, it's ultimately a loss, but it's like it's his greatest achievement in his life. And similarly with Presidents, it's a loss, but back at the keyboard, Rocky's like, I don't want to fight again. I've done enough, you know, right then we may have imagined a world where there wasn't going to be Rocky 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then Creed 1 and 2. But you in Presidents, it's like, he's being sworn in, but we've still got to work. We've still got to pound those keys. So
it might have the line that speaks to all of them, which is the idea of going the distance.
Yeah, the distance.
And the idea going the distance and completing to the best that you can. It's more important than the win. It's about it's almost an existential concern, and I think that that's what we take away from all the President's Men.
That is the perfect segue for us to jump into minute 109. Of Alan J. Pakula and Robert Redford's 1976 masterpiece, All the President's Men. So it's 1 hour, 48 minutes on the dial, whether you're watching it on streaming or Blu-ray or DVD. Josh and I are going to watch it along right now. You guys are going to listen along, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about it. And now a quick word from our sponsors. As guys, so much of our identity is wrapped in our hair. If you're listening to One Heat Minute, we just so happen to talk about movies with guys whose hair is luscious and delicious, whether you're talking about Inherent Vice with Doc, Change Your Hair, Change Your Life, whether you're talking about Dustin Hoffman's gorgeous locks as Carl Bernstein in All the Presidents, hair is important. And so when you get in your 20s and 30s, if you start losing your hair, it is panic time because no guy really is ever ready to go bald. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. Did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Don't wait until the later diehards. What were they called? Live Free Diehard. Don't wait till that Bruce Willis, cue ball Bruce Willis. Go right back to Die Hard. That's the time you need to act. The time you need to act is when Hans Gruber is in the building. The great thing about Keeps is that you can get treated from home. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online, get the hair loss medication delivered right to your home. In 2020, we only want that stuff delivered. They make it easy. They deliver your medication every 3 months so you can say goodbye to waiting at checkouts and awkward doctor visits. It's all done. Prevention is key. Keep treatments typically take between 4 to 6 months to see results, so it's important to act fast. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Now, for the awesome listeners of One Heat Minute, if you want to support the show and you are ready to take action to prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/OHM to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's Keeps, KEEPS.com/OHM, as in one heat minute. Find out why more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. And now, back to the show. Holy shimoly.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It is the things that immediately strike me is there is no real other moment in this movie that you see peril in Robert Redford's eyes. And not many movies just in general that you see pure peril. And it's just, I mean, there's something so deeply relatable about getting in your own head like that. Even though in this movie, it actually probably isn't him getting in his own head, but God damn it, this is such a wonderful minute.
This is, I mean, this minute really moves me personally too, because it really is the grammar of like a horror film.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen paranoia in this film, and we've seen argumentation and, you know, all sorts of different ways of brewing tension. But this might as well be a giallo. This feels like a giallo film.
Yes.
And also I think the first thing we should probably say, when we pop in there, it's so dark. I mean, this is Gordon Willis. He's illuminating a profile, just like an outline basically of the front of his face.
Yes.
And you see the bush, the shrub behind him, and he's walking and the camera's tracking. That's a very dark composition. I mean, that is an incredibly dark, right? Aren't you struck? How underlit this is?
Oh, it's, and also, but it's, that's what immediately makes you feel like you're just wrapped in a blanket of paranoia, because it's like in movies, things aren't this dark, because this feels like real darkness, you know. It's, and the fact that it's like that, it's like if you've ever got off a train late at night, or, you know, and especially at a commuter station, sometimes you go into a car park that usually is burgeoning with people, and there's all these full cars. And then sometimes you get off the train at 2 a.m. because you've had a late night out with friends, and you get, and your car's the only one. And you stalk through, and it's underlit through these underlit car parks, and it's creepy. And the only thing you can hear is literally the grit being ground on your feet along concrete, and the echo. And so for me, it's the echo. It's that spacing. It's the just the little dampness of the night. And
I'm so glad you bring up the sounds, because it's like, let's give it up for David Shire once again. And just the escalation of the footfalls, right?
Yes.
He's breaking into a run very slowly. It's in sync with the music, so that chord is playing, it's growing louder. The sound is really doing a lot to ramp up the tension. And then, of course, the quick inhalation of breath. He turns, and it's like, and there's even the slightest zoom in.
Yes.
It's like, what the? Not only are you tracking, not only are you, do you have the score killing it, not only do you have the footfalls, but zoom, the little tiniest of zooms, like what? Just amazing.
And you make the best point, which is, this is where I think where great horror movies excel is, the really rote version of this is just steady inclination, a steady incline of music. Like it's picking up. Once he turns, there's a big bombastic punctuation mark with music, bah, 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 and then there is something there. And a true thriller just goes, we're going to use all the same tools in our kit, but we're going to make it so tangible. Like, we're going to just have this escalating music that is almost like this little percussive heartbeat. We're going to try and stay out of what you're shooting's way. We're going to go with the footfall. So it's all there. It's complementary. And then it's going to stop. And then that vacuum of noise and nothing being there, and maybe just a flutter of a tree, is so much more terrifying, because it's so real. It feels so much more real than like a monster around the corner. And I think that that's like the greatest horror movies just get. That they get that, let's just keep it just that whisker closer to reality. Just that, it's the most under-talked about thing of another film of this era, The Exorcist. There is nothing more scary in that movie, in my mind, than a bunch of male doctors telling a mother who is absolutely freaking out that her daughter may be possessed by the devil that she just has ADHD. Now, that's the scariest part of that movie, because it feels like there could be a chorus of medical professionals going, she's fine. You know, don't worry about the crawling on the walls. She's fine. And it's like, no, There's something wrong.
And that's really, I mean, if we're to go deeper into the symbology of this moment in All the President's Men, you make a good point about how, well, like with the with that exorcist scene, the real fear is not being heard, not being listened to,
yes,
not being believed. So when Redford turns around and we see the reverse shot, yes, it's empty. But in a way, it's not. Because yes, what he's seeing right in that moment, and it cuts back to Redford and you can see it in his reaction, is he's realizing that he's always going to feel this. He's always going to know that his government lied to him. He's always going to know that it went up to the highest level and that his life might be at risk just for simply trying to expose the truth. And that paranoia is just something he's going to have to live with.
Yeah.
It's just, that to me is the scariest thing about the movie. Because in the, because maybe it's a death of idealism in that moment. He turns over his shoulder. He sees nothing, but he feels everything.
Yeah.
And that's why that fade that happens right there. You see him, he's walking in a big government plaza, an empty parking lot. The buildings loom over him. They don't seem like nice government buildings. He's dwarfed by them. And even the way he's walking in long shot, I don't even know if it's Redford himself. It might be another, like a second actor or a double. He's walking in a very dejected way, as almost as if to suggest, it doesn't matter anymore because I'm always going to know that there was something behind me.
And I'm always going to, there's none of the warmth of Washington either. It's all gone. It's just these oppressive government buildings, gray like a fog. And he's now in the fog. That's it. Like it's in this moment that he comes out. And even then we get the Sally Aitken scene, which we've just entered the newsroom, like as an establishment shot. You know, the guy who's talking to Sally Aitken and has a no BS attitude is a guy who is now realizing the burden of constantly being cynical for his life, because now, you know, this waspy idealist has come in and he's like, in, you know, the back 30 seconds of an exchange with a source, has realized, oh God, this is so much bigger than me.
To the very top. In fact, it's funny, we mentioned Giallo before. That shot, that big looming shot of the buildings overhanging a character, you can see that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Suspiria, which is actually, yes, a year after this film. I do wonder if Argento was inspired by this, because this idea of like your plaza being not a safe place, but actually a kind of a terrifying place. That's, you know, that kind of runs through, I think, a lot of these movies, the idea of the public places under siege. And then the very tail end of our moment here, I love the hard cut to the really brightly lit newsroom.
Yes.
As if to say, the work of these people still goes on, still busy, it's brightly lit. That's about as overt, I think, as Gordon Willis ever gets. In other words, the truth will still be found out by these people who are still
working because it's easy to get lost. It's the Antonioni version of this movie is another 3 hours in that plaza, but we just don't have that right now. It's
instead we're going to cut to Dustin Hoffman doing his little collar pop. You know, he's got time to go, you know.
We've still got things to do, but it's a funny plaza thing. Of course, every opportunity I'm going to mention Michael Mann, but there's a great scene in Manhunter where, you know, William Peterson's Will Graham is, you know, they're trying to get who they call the Tooth Fairy at that time. And they're trying to ensnare him in this big government plaza. It's another plaza that I often think about, is in all those, what you feel like are vacant crevices in that movie is just full of cops. And so he's walking through someone and someone runs near him. And even that's what makes it even more terrifying, because that movie is obviously a psychological thriller. So it's playing with you, but it's that thing of, if Then when you're alone in isolation, you can find peace and safety in this weird fog of isolation. And then when people come near you, the paranoia gets to heightened levels again. And then, you know, people are rushing out of all these little crevices, like little cockroaches who've been hiding in the dark. And it's a very creepy motif that helps to punctuate this whole feeling that happens at the end of that minute.
And then, of course, the great paranoia classic, The Conversation,
yes,
which begins and ends and basically throughout the entire movie, is a scene in a plaza where two people, I'm not going to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but are ostensibly...
Shame on you if you haven't. It is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Right? The plaza is a place of safety where two people can have a conversation, provided they're not being spied on. So I think that we just sort of stumbled into kind of a big motif, I think, in a lot of these films.
Yes. And that, and just the ability to, especially also in the preceding minute, of the realization for Redford too of, I don't know what's taken him to this moment, to this length, to see it. Because I think that that's an important factor, is Deep Throat's making him go to all these lengths, and in a very compliant and sort of, I want to make sure that my source feels comfortable, he's doing all of these extraordinary things and checking over his shoulder. But that one car maneuver in there, whatever that does to spook Deep Throat, the whole 120 seconds from the moment that Deep Throat is no longer there all the way to the end is such a journey. Like, it's such a great journey. And again, a wordless journey of this guy who's usually this towering figure, and compared to his diminutive, you know, co-lead in Hoffman, is usually the big tall guy, but just watching him sort of stalk and just all that storm of emotions going through his face, it's just so wonderful. And again, unlike The Conversation, what's so cool about Presidents, and what I think a lot of people forget, is that they still have the burden of telling a docudrama. And ultimately, they can have these flourishes of, like, no, storytelling and cinema and mood and tone. And some people are like, oh, no, it's all in the newsroom. And then you're like, just watch minute 109, 108. Watch, be in the bowels of a car park where it feels like the underworld, where the source is lit like Hades. And then come out into, you know, a world where Even a tree can feel like it's hostile, can feel like there's something, I don't know, malevolent.
And it's also, like you say, it doesn't break the truth of the real story, in the sense that, I mean, if I was being very naive, I could suggest that was just somebody leaving on their own car trip. They were, you know, and it was 4 a.m. I don't know. Or maybe it was...
And hooning out of a car park at 4 a.m. That's totally normal.
Hearing out. And okay, so maybe Deep Throat kind of overreacted and he kind of fled, but, you know, who knows? But that's the whole point. In other words, every single sound, every little brush of a tree, every sound of wind, every sound of gravel is going to be suspect. And I think that writers and journalists and audiences take that away from the film, which is that if you listen closely enough, you can hear the malfeasance, you know, and it's sort of like, and maybe you can go too far in believing into the conspiracies, but in this case, they're real.
Yeah. I think, look, we're at a time where I think conspiracy, you know, I've heard a few people over a few years, and I think it's like, if you don't have as much historical hindsight, like that whole thing of like conspiracies are mainstream, it's like conspiracies have been mainstream, you know, at least for the last 20 years, you know, all it took was JFK to be made and be nominated for Oscars. And like that helped to enliven conspiratorial thinking and all those sorts of things. But people have been talking about conspiracies for decades, but right now I feel like it's the strangest conspiracy, like the bows that conspiracies draw in 2020 are so strange, you know, like, you know, we only have to, I don't even want to mention that certain letter of the alphabet people that are out there right now who believe that Donald Trump is the second coming of Jesus Christ.
You're going to get a lot of listeners for this. But I think that is the one thing about the 70s conspiracy movies that they obviously were too soon to get. They were too early to appreciate, is the fact that there would be a day when we would see all these things in bright daylight And the real irony is that no one would care.
Yeah.
Is that the conspiracy would be conducted, you know, so blithely and openly, and that the citizenry would just be like, I like that. I like that they're getting away with that. That's, you know.
And that's the another film of that year, which is why, you know, 1976 might be one of the greatest years ever for movies, is Network. And one of the things along this journey that I've been doing is like, and Matt Zoller-Zeitz, who was a guest of the show, talked about how he used to think this movie was so authentic and real, and now he feels like it's a fantasy because, you know, people were actually held to account for crimes that they did. But the near farcical levels of Network and All the President's Men are happening in the same year, and when you put them together, it's like, no, they're not as far apart. They're not nearly as far apart. They're not polar opposites. And I think in so much of the dialogue and even my study and research for this movie and this entire New Hollywood period, they posit, you know, a parallax view and a Network at one end of the spectrum, and then the sort of more balanced and, you know, if you're talking like a political spectrum, the more centrist version of it is like an All the President's Men, because at least it has a level of objectivity. But what I'm finding in 2020 is exactly like you said, that predictive quality of a lot of these artists, that sort of being able to predict the future, they are just, they're all the same DNA's there, and it's just expressing it in slightly different ways, you know, some much more overt but it's, you know, in this movie, they go to the bowels of the underworld, and, and Howard in Network talks to the devil, you know, so it's kind of, except his devil is like marching, is Ned Beatty marching around a table, trumpeting around that table, telling him the end of the world is coming, and basically he needs to be an instrument for capitalism. But it's just one of those, things that I keep watching. I'm like, God, these movies are just, they're brothers. They're happening right now. It's the same thing.
And all the movies you've just mentioned, the paranoid classics of the 70s, they work so well because they're vessels for our own paranoia. In other words, the more paranoia you bring to it, they are. And it's funny, someone online recently was talking, I think yesterday, about what's the movie that speaks most to the Trump era. I think it might have been Alex Dowd at the AV Club who asked that question. And I gave it some thought and I chimed in. And for me, the movie that really speaks most to this moment that we're in right now is The Invisible Man, which is the same kind of like, somebody's gaslighting you, it's a toxic man, nobody believes you, something bad happens in a restaurant. There's all sorts of compounded timeliness, and also the invisible enemy. You could go really deeply into it. But the reason I bring this question up that Alex asked is because the paranoid movies, be they from 2020 or 1976, I think are the ones that I feel personally closest to. because really, at the end of the day, when you're watching a movie by yourself, by and large, you know, in front of your TV and it's late at night, that's when the dark thoughts creep in. As much as talking about a movie and a podcast like this makes me feel not alone, it makes me feel these movies, All the President's Men in particular, stresses the idea that there's a solidarity in finding the truth, and being alone is being unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the more effort that you go to making yourself isolated and building these barriers and walls, the greater the victory for those that are trying to penetrate them, you know, like the Harry Calls of the world. It's like, Harry's downfall is so unbelievable. So we obviously won't try not to spoil the conversation, but I feel like that, because that felt like a different world. I was so lucky to see that movie at the beginning of the year, to meet Lee and Elle and go and introduce the film when it was released in Oz. And I mean, there's this like early batch of films where people are like, this early batch of films that where the year was still a normal year, that are all like, give Affleck an Oscar for The Way Back. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no other movies. There's no other movies that have come out this year. And so you're like, yeah, okay, well, we might be able to buy that. But no, I think that's the genius of that that approach to Lee making Invisible Man was just like, I'm going to make it for now. I'm going to make it for this period. And it just feels like anything that's been made in the last couple of years has got all that energy of that Gaslight energy. It's not accelerated to the fever pitch that I guess we're experiencing right this very minute in October. And there were so many great tweets last week about, you know, when by the time that Trump and it was announced the American president had the coronavirus, people are like, the tax story was 7 days ago. Like, what had happened in between? The tax story was 7 days ago.
Just getting into the whole Melania recording story, you know, like the whole Christmas story. And like, there were too many things all at once. But I keep on reading that the Times is actually going to be, you know, again, back to the power of the press, the Times actually has two more large reports from the tax stuff that are still forthcoming.
Yeah.
And I think they might have actually held one given the breaking news of the president catching COVID-19.
Yes.
They will be returning to that story and beating that drum.
And as we know, that's, you just need to keep following that story. And I did hear something that was really funny about, like, who maybe knows more about the worst aspects of sort of rich America than an immigrant lady who comes over here to marry a rich guy and then has to go into public service. Like, maybe she, like, we need to talk, people need to get like an interview with her, because that sort of no bullshit, like, who cares about Christmas decorations? Like, I actually want to hear more from her. I think she's got more to say. I think she's got some tea to spill in the parlance of 2020 that we might need. Like, that's something we might need in this news cycle. But yeah, look, I love what you said there, and there's nothing more true. It's that there is this weird thing in these paranoia thrillers, especially as we're all locked in our houses all together. JFK's gotten a few hot runs here. I was lucky enough to see The Conversation earlier this year at like at a cinema, and have watched it since at home. And I think you're right. It's like, and all around this project, watching things like Network and those things to stay in the mindset. But yeah, there is something really comforting and weird about how it makes all the hairs on your arms stand up. You know, these movies, they make in this moment, and you're watching it loud and there's no distractions. You're not allowed to have a second screen anywhere near you when you're watching this in its truest form. And it's like, when this happens, it kind of changes gives your heartbeat a little flutter, and then you move into the next moments of the movie, and it's just outstanding.
Yeah. I watched Our Moment in preparation of this conversation last night. I watched it several times. I have to admit, after that last time, I just let the rest of the movie play. It just, you let it wash over you.
Yeah.
This is, you're about to really dive into, I think, one of the most perfect endings, right, of any Hollywood movie. The fact that this ending was even allowed to happen, I think, is just staggering.
I've been trapped. I've been watching this sequence in preparation for the last few weeks. We've had some wonderful guests, and I've just been watching it, and I've been trapped so many times, Josh, like going, I'll just leave it on while I'm working. And that means that work is going to start in another 35 minutes, because the movie's got to end first. And I literally have just let it go, and it just keeps going. And in preparation for a couple of future minutes, I'm like, God damn it. It just gets me, like, it traps me every time. And I never learned my lesson of just don't leave it playing, just hit pause and stop it. But if I'm like sitting here typing, getting ready to, you know, getting ready to edit the episodes, nothing happens. I just put my feet up and it's time to watch the rest of this movie.
You must have been asked this question before, and pardon me for asking you a question, but they must work like the way a baby likes being swaddled. These movies like All the President's Men and Zodiac and Inherent Vice, the ones that you've devoted so much time to and so much of your brain power to, they must make you feel comforted.
Extremely comforting. We have a little pandemic film club of a few friends and I that are around, and in that little crew, it was my turn to assign the movie, and I said, let's watch Heat, and they all said, are you joking? Like, you know how we've all watched Heat a million times, and you've watched, and I go, yes, I want to. You know, I told you there was some stuff going on in my personal life. I said, I want to watch Heat because that's exactly the experience. And the weird thing is, I think that people misinterpret or maybe it's just it's a complete misnomer about movies that you really love losing the ability for you to get lost in them. And I think that is completely wrong, because I was watching Heat and I reckon it's about 14 to 16 minutes in the wake of the first heist, that you can blink and an hour is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just gone. Like, an hour just goes like that. And so being able to do that, and in these movies, I think that's what I appreciate. The music of it, it's like your favorite album. People talk about with albums all the time. There's no skips, you know, there's no skips. And I think that that's the same with great movies. There's no skips of distraction. Nothing's going to distract me. Usually the whole family's in bed. And when you're watching Heat at home late at night, for anyone who knows, unlike President's Men or other movies with the sound mix, anytime there's action in Heat, you will blow your speakers and your family out of their beds if you leave it at full volume or high volume. So you have to be really on edge to like turn it down or make sure you've got wireless headphones or something to be listening to. But like, just
my practical guide to watching Heat at home.
I need to write that. But that's the, I still get lost in all of these. I genuinely, exactly as you said, it is a comforting, it's like meditative, like, you know, where someone wants, it may not put me to sleep, or sometimes it can. But that meditative quality of it's on. And so it's comforting. It's like your favorite album. That favorite thing. I sometimes don't even have to be watching it. It's just, it can be on in my office and it's around and the ingredients are just pouring out into the world and I'm catching it.
Yeah. I totally hear that. And I look forward to the day when the movies that make me comforted are a little less, you know, diabolical. Although I am always comforted by horror films. It's a genre that I love. I do feel like lately, especially, I've been gorging myself on scariness.
Yes.
Scariness, political scariness, social scariness, and also just straight up supernatural scariness.
And we're in October, and it was funny you were talking about that kind of possession thing. I've been diving into, you know, for a piece that I was working on, I'm diving into demonic possession. And And then I was out at a lunch with a friend for their birthday, and we heard a story about them being followed on the way home by this creepy person. And let me tell you, Josh, like, it hasn't done good. Like, I was fine when I was watching The Possession in the movies, but then when I heard like a creepy stalker story while I'd had a head full of demonic possession movies, it doesn't actually do you good. I was like, oh God, I need to watch Heat again or All the President's Men or something. I need to cleanse myself, because that's the level of creepiness I'm allowed now. I just need a few days where it's like, all right, I'm going to watch something like The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles for just a few days, just to cleanse. And then we'll go back in something whimsical and silly. And then we can go back to demonic possession and 70s paranoia.
As soon as this guy fucking loses and can sleep, I'm going to watch La La Land or something.
Oh my God. That is going to be the funnest night to watch Letterboxd. It's just like, see what all your friends are like. It's going to be all this joyful movie, Singing in the Rain, La 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 Land, Fantasia might get a run. It's going to be a fun night. Josh, this has been the best. I've loved talking to you twice. Thank you so much for being a part of the show again. And it's been awesome chatting to you both on and off air today. It's awesome. Thank you so much.
I love talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Joshua Rothkopf. God, Josh is simply one of my favorite people to talk to. If you want to find out what he's up to, the best place to find him is at Josh Rothkopf, which is Rothkopf on Twitter. You will find him writing about film festivals and about films, and he's just truly one of the sort of best guys that is online writing about movies and has such a breadth of expertise and really someone that I'm again completely blown away that joined me for this journey not only once but twice. Guys, thank you so much for listening to All the President's Minutes once again. I'm obviously Blake Howard. If you want to follow me on socials, it's One Blake Minute on both Instagram and Twitter. You can follow the show at ATPM Pod. I can't even say that. At ATPM Pod on Twitter. Find us at oneheatminute.com. If you haven't, subscribe, rate, review. It helps. We don't have many episodes to go. Thank you so much for this furious journey through 2020 and through this film and through the prism of history, of politics, of journalism and cinema. And I just am so grateful. Thank you for listening. We have amazing guests to come. Stay tuned. Some bangers. Some surprises. We wouldn't get away with not having a surprise for you, huh? Wonder what that might be.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.